from WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made when you swiped right and got a match on Tinder. You've been swiping left and right throughout the day, and if you're like the average person who uses mobile dating apps, you spend between 7 and 8.5 hours a week looking through photos on Tinder. The app has about 50 million users. Since the late 90s, the number of people using online dating sites and mobile apps has increased. Pew Research reports that 15% of U.S. adults say they've used the technology, and now more than one-third of marriages start online. Plus, online dating is losing much of its stigma. According to Pew, 59% of Americans say online dating is a good way to meet people. But it does come with its disadvantages. Some users say there's less buy-in for dates because there's less at stake. They say it's easier to stand someone up if you've only met on an app. And women, especially, report rude and offensive messages from male users who, the women say, would probably not say certain things to them in person. But all things considered, the multi-billion dollar online and mobile dating industry has led to changes in dating culture. In a recent piece about Tinder in the Atlantic Monthly, Ashley Fetters writes, quote, "There's been plenty of hand-wringing and gnashing of teeth over how Tinder could reinvent dating. Maybe it would transform the dating scene into an endless virtual marketplace where singles could shop for each other, like an Amazon for human companionship, or perhaps it could turn dating into a minimal effort transactional pursuit of on-demand hookups like an Uber for sex. But the reality of dating is the age of apps is a little more nuanced than that," end quote. So this hour, we're talking about that nuance. And our guests have either used Tinder or other apps, or they've studied it, and they've studied how mobile and online dating sites have changed the dating landscape. Lots to talk about this hour. We want to hear from you, of course, and your mobile or online dating experiences. Joining me in the studio, Dennis O'Brien. He's a Rochester resident who uses mobile dating apps. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me here.
Uliana Nikolaeva-Herr is a Rochester resident who met her husband on Tinder. Welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Ronald Raggi is an associate professor of psychology at the University of Rochester. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And joining us on the phone is Harry Reese, a professor of psychology and a dean's professor in arts, sciences, and engineering at the University of Rochester as well. Welcome to you, Harry.
Glad to be here, Megan.
So Tinder launched in 2012 and became available to all smartphone users in 2013. And as The Atlantic reported, it ushered in a new era in the history of romance, which is a big statement to make. We're hearing about more married couples or couples in serious relationships who have met online. In fact, the research is showing that couples who met online are more likely to stay married than those who don't. We'll turn to the researchers to talk about that. But Dennis, I'd like to start with you. When you talk with friends about how they've met their partners, is it sort of a given that they've met online, or are we not quite there yet?
I wouldn't say it's a given, but it's certainly more common than usual. I think a lot of people are realizing that just going out in public or even going to a bar is not an invitation to be hit on. And I think kind of that cold calling aspect is something that seems to be going away or isn't as normal. I'm kind of shy. I kind of err on the side of caution and not approaching people in public places because I don't know that I necessarily want to be approached either in certain situations. So I think the apps are a good way to kind of make initial connections where you have a common frame of reference. And one thing that I like to suggest to people is that, especially I use Bumble. One of the nice things is they have an icon that tells you if someone has, wants, or does not want children, which is a big deal breaker for a lot of people. And that way you can kind of swipe off the bat knowing, well, this is down the road not going to work out anyway, because obviously that's a big life change that you just don't change just because someone's attractive, hopefully. And, you know, you can kind of not go down that road before it becomes more painful later on.
Mm-hmm. Willie, what about you? Do you find most of your friends who have partners have met online, or have they met in traditional places? And just get right on your mic for me.
Okay.
There you go.
I have like a handful of friends who have met just like, you know, through school or through like mutual friends. And I find that, you know, an increased amount of them are starting to meet on like Tinder. I think it's funny because sometimes like they're like a little bit hesitant to like even admit that they met online. They're like, oh yeah, like we met through mutual friends, because they're embarrassed that they like met on Tinder. But
Well, that's something I wanted to talk about, the stigma. So Pew is reporting that more people are comfortable with online dating. They think it's a good place to meet people. Ron and Harry, as researchers, what are you finding when you talk to people who are using this? Are they a little hesitant to admit that they're using online sites?
Well, in my study, I recently did a study about how people found partners, and more people were reporting Tinder use than dating website use. And it was still the traditional offline social activities like doing activities with friends or going to bars or clubs or parties. Those were the most commonly endorsed. But fully a third of our sample, or a little more, endorsed using Tinder and Grindr and other geosocial networking apps. So there's not as much stigma as maybe 10 years ago, but anecdotally, you know, I'm a couples researcher, so when I meet somebody in a relationship, one of the first questions I ask is, how did you guys meet? And if there's ever a pause, it's usually followed by, well, we met online. Mm-hmm. So I think there still is a little stigma. It's not completely gone, but I'd be interested to hear what Harry had thought.
Well, my experience is sort of similar to what you're saying. I think that there's still a bit of a stigma among younger people. If you ask college students if they're using these sites, they cringe. They don't want to say it, and maybe that's because there are so many opportunities for dating among college students. But if you go to older individuals, let's say individuals beyond the age of 35, I think the stigma is largely gone. Most people seem perfectly willing to go that route. You know, we rely on apps to do just about everything in our lives. Well, why not this?
Oh, go ahead, Ron.
You know, it's interesting. I agree with Harry, although my Tinder study that we started was started because the 300 undergrads in my psych of sex class at the U of R voted that they wanted to do a study on that. I develop a research project for the class so the students can get involved in some actual research. So they were definitely, it was a resounding vote. They came up with that idea and they were very interested in the results. So there's stigma, but there's also interest and curiosity, mm-hmm. I would say.
I was talking to someone about this show very recently, and this person said, why are you doing a show on a hookup app? And I said, oh, it's a dating app as well. You can use it for multiple reasons. Do you think that many people still look at Tinder as just a way to hook up with people? Is that part of the bad rap that we're hearing about? Or
is
this person just a little out of touch?
Maybe a little out of touch, but I think it gets a bad rap. But also you can tell in swiping through people's bios, people will specifically say no hookups. Mm-hmm. And that's generally speaking, an indication that obviously they're not looking for hookups, but it's a way to use it as another dating site. And a lot of people will be on multiple apps. You'll see similar profiles across a couple of apps just to, you know, kind of widen the net. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And just to put a spin on that, let's remember that lying about one's dating priorities is not a new phenomenon.
Uli, you first started using the app as a self-esteem booster, you were telling me. That's okay. That's great. And, you know, you mentioned you don't have strong opinions about it either way, but you were using it because, you know, it was personally a really good thing for you. So tell us a little bit about your story, because you are now married to someone that you met on Tinder.
Yeah. But yeah, Tinder obviously like has like these connotations of like, oh, like people just are on there to hook up. So like I never used it very like seriously. I was just like, oh, like this is kind of like, no, I don't want to say like a game because it's like human people on the other side of it. But yeah, I was like, oh, hey, I find this person attractive and they also find me attractive. I never really had intentions of like talking to anyone on it, or I would like compliment them and then we'd have like a couple back and forth and it never really went anywhere. Yeah.
So how did you meet Mike? Well, on Tinder. How did things go after you swiped right?
Yeah, it was really funny because he was a lot more, like, he talked to me a lot more, and once again, like, I wasn't really taking it seriously, but then we actually went into, like, a lot of, like, really, not, like, deep conversation, but he was going to school for video game design, and I grew up playing a lot of video games, so we like had a lot of exchanges about that. We talked about movies, and we talked about rock climbing, and like we just had all of these really great exchanges, and I was like, oh wow, like I actually feel like kind of connected to this person. And then we ended up meeting up for a date, and the rest is history.
You said that meeting him for the first time, you had one question that's now sort of a running joke, but I'm sure it came out of some concern.
Yeah. I mean, definitely there's like a lot of like anonymity. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but like you don't really know who you're meeting. We did end up having some like mutual friends because we both went to the Rochester Institute of Technology. So we did have some friends in common, but on our first date, I was just kind of jokingly saying like, oh, wait, like, you're not going to murder me, are you? Yep.
Dennis, do you ever get nervous when you're setting up dates to meet people in person that you've met online?
I don't.
This is not meant to be a scare tactic show. I just want to tell everybody, you're fine. You're probably fine.
I understand that that fear, though, and that is something that, you know, because obviously, if you weren't a nice person, you wouldn't say you weren't a nice person, you know, I mean, obviously. But yeah, I think there is a little bit of trying to kind of show and convince someone that, like, you know, you're serious, you're a normal person, that, you know, things are going to be okay, to the extent of a first date being okay or awkward or bad, just on its own merit, not, you know, putting yourself in a bad situation. So, you know, I think, you know, obviously, meeting in public places and doing, you know, the kind of traditional thing is still, you know, very, very welcome.
Listeners, you can call in and share your experiences with online and mobile dating apps, 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. If you'd like to send us an email, it's connections@WXXI.org. And you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. But I'll turn back to our researchers right now, because at the top of the show, I described Tinder and other sites as revolutionizing the era of dating. Is that an overstatement, Ron? Is that too strong of a word?
I don't think it's an overstatement. I think it's offering people a completely new way to sort of connect with others, or at least surf through their options. And for people who are in geographically isolated areas, or for people who are a little shy, or people who want to stalk their exes. These are all very common reasons, very common motives that people look at for why they use apps like this. But I think it's definitely growing, and it's becoming, you know, a phenomenon. It's almost like people are sort of having half of their first date via the exchange they have on the app. And then they, you know, then it's a little awkward because you have to meet in person and see, is that connection still there when you're actually sitting face to face? I was dating really heavily in the 90s, and I was using dating apps back when I was using AOL dial-up, because I'm that old. And it was, you know, I quickly learned I didn't want too many message exchanges, because then it would take a lot of time, and then sometimes you'd sit down in front of that person and the chemistry just wasn't there when you saw each other face to face. So, but I think it's a tremendous asset, and it can be abused. It can be used well. It can be used poorly. The study that we're publishing data out of right now, about half of the people who were using Tinder met up with people who had used it in the last 2 months, met people from Tinder in the last 2 months. And it was about equal proportions of hookups and dates. And a fair proportion of those dates actually turned into romantic relationships. So it's definitely, it qualifies for its positive reputation and its negative reputation. There are some people on there just to hook up. Fortunately, a lot of them make it clear in their profiles. And then there are some people on there sincerely looking for romantic relationships, and it can be used as that as well.
Harry, you've written an article called Dating in the Digital World for Scientific American, which has a lot of tips in it. And we can post the link to it on our website for our listeners. But do you think that the word revolutionized is an overstatement, or do you agree with Ron?
I agree with my colleague Ron. The range of possibilities that online dating opens up is far greater than we used to have. I did my initial dating in the early 1970s, and you would sit around saying, how am I going to find someone? How am I going to meet someone? Well, that dilemma doesn't exist anymore. At the same time, I think we need to keep in mind that although the process of finding someone to initiate contact with, that may not have changed, but everything that goes on in the dating world is still the same as it always was. So, you know, the awkwardness of a first date, the search for do I have chemistry with this person, is this someone I want to go further with, those are the same as they always were. And I think we actually are using the wrong word when we talk about online dating. It's really online meeting. The dating goes on face-to-face just as it always has.
Online meeting. We're now rephrasing everything on the show. Thank you for that, Harry. Well, you mentioned some of the benefits, and I think we should break some of those down for maybe some listeners who are still caught up in the stigma. And if you are, that's okay. Call us. We want to talk through it, talk about it. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. And one of the common threads that I've been reading as a benefit is it's facilitating interactions between people who may never have crossed paths otherwise, whether it's geographical regions or maybe, you know, they don't hang out at the local bar or club where you go often. And I know Ron and Harry, you've both studied that. And Ron, your research on Grindr and Tinder specifically addresses that. So in terms of like how far we've come, how much we've advanced in terms of technology, are you seeing a lot of people in your research who are meeting people outside of their general geographic areas that they wouldn't have otherwise met?
That is a fascinating question. Unfortunately, in this first Tinder study, we didn't ask the questions we needed to. Really, we need to ask about each partner's social network and then see how much they would have overlapped. So that will probably be for the next study. But I would hazard a guess that you're absolutely right, that people from different walks of life or people who just move in different social circles and don't happen to go to the same, don't, you know, aren't both playing kickball or aren't doing the same activities or, you know, playing volleyball at Hot Shots or going to the same clubs, that they have a chance to meet where it would have been much, much harder for them to do that. What our research does say is that people spend about the same amount of time using dating websites or Tinder and Grindr as they would have done going to bars or parties or clubs. So it seems like for the people where it's a good fit, they are just sort of funneling that social partner seeking into a different venue.
I've read some research about interracial marriages, the numbers of those going up because people are meeting people outside of the regular social circles. Is that something you've come across as well?
I haven't come across that, but that's a question I could look at in my data.
I'm just giving you projects.
Yes,
right?
That's a great question. Harry, do you know about that?
Well, the latest numbers clearly show that the number of interracial couples in the U.S. is growing up. I believe I saw the statistic that in marriages in 2017, about 17% of them were interracial couples, which is a considerable gain from, let's say, 10 or 20 years ago. But what the reason for that is, I think, is much harder to identify. You know, opportunities of the sort that online dating provides may be part of that story, but I think there's a lot more to it as well.
Yeah, it would be nice to believe that maybe people's attitudes are growing less intolerant and more accepting. And it would be nice if that was part of that story, too. But certainly, Tinder, using apps like Tinder could facilitate that.
Well, we have another question about research coming in, so I'm just going to continue to add to your homework list, Ron. But first up on the phones is Sarah in Rochester. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, great. So I actually did use online dating apps for a while when I was in my 20s, and met my husband in person, parallel. And my question is actually, now that I'm no longer in my 20s, I'm older. I have friends who are also older who have not found their match. And I have a question about whether there has been any research done about perceptions of ages in profiles and whether or not surrounding the truthfulness of what people report based on what they expect the reader to look for. So to be more specific, my friends who are in their 40s are worried that people in their late 30s or in their 30s limit their searches to people under 40. And so I know some people who currently are not truthful about their age because they want to be included in younger people's searches. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, no problem, Sarah. Harry, do you want to jump in there first?
Yes, well, there are actually some studies that confirm what the caller is saying, that the average profile lies by about 2.5 years, and 2.5 years younger, of course. But there's good reason to think that lying about things like your age is a real mistake, because people are going to meet you. And when they see that you're not that age, that kind of defeats the whole purpose. So if your goal is to get a lot of people to swipe right for you, well, lying might have some purpose. But if your goal is to meet somebody and have a successful connection with them, lying doesn't really make a lot of sense.
There are also we looked at sort of demographic differences across Plenty of Fish, Match.com, and OkCupid. And definitely Match.com skewed to a slightly older demographic of people in their 30s and 40s, whereas OkCupid was definitely people more typically in their 20s. And there are actually dating websites, I don't know about apps, but there might be apps, that target an older population to try and get around this. Like, if they're interested in dating people their own age and they're in their 40s or in their 50s, there are separate websites or apps that they could go to sort of select from that pool and not get a ton of unnecessary rejections.
Well, that's a good point. We're talking a lot about Tinder, but there are very specific apps for people that want to only date people within a certain, you know, set of characteristics, whether it's JDate or Christian Mingle, if it's a religious thing, or I'm sure there are many, many sites out there that I don't know.
FarmersOnly.com.
What was that?
There's FarmersOnly.com.
Oh, FarmersOnly.com. So
there's ZombiesOnly.com.
I do want to bring up a point that Dennis mentioned offline, or before the hour began. He said that when you go on a dating site or a dating app, you know that people are interested. So you don't have to experience the awkwardness of meeting someone at a party or a bar or a wedding, trying to see if they have a ring, trying to ask questions that are like, oh, so what does your girlfriend think? And waiting for an answer. So you already know you're going into a pool of people that are available, that are looking. And
I'd like to qualify that, though.
Okay, please do.
Because when we asked the Tinder users, are you currently single? 80% were single, but there were 20% of Tinder users who were still using it and potentially still meeting people. Either they were in open relationships, or they were maybe looking for other partners, or some of them said they were just doing it because they wanted to stalk their friends and see who their friends were dating. But they're not all. You can't completely assume other users are single.
You're right.
But it's still a better odds than, say, going into Wegmans or a bar and just approaching people.
It's probably about the same odds as a bar.
We have a question from Tim via email. He says, are there any studies on the success rate of marriages of people who met on dating apps? And are the divorce rates higher, lower, or about the same as people who met through traditional methods? Harry or Ron?
Well, I'm going to give you the hardcore scientist answer to that, which is yes, there are studies, but no, you really can't draw conclusions from them. And the reason for that is something we call selection bias. The kind of people who meet through dating sites are not the same as the kind of people who meet through other sites, and those tendencies can affect the divorce rate. So there is a study that came out a few years ago that showed the divorce rate from online dating site was slightly lower than it is in the population at large. But you really can't compare them because you simply don't know if it's really the method of meeting that matters or if it's something about the ways in which people meet, the ways in which people choose how to go about meeting their partners.
Mm-hmm. Ron?
Yeah, I agree with Harry. The question, I would actually sort of frame that it's not so much are the relationships more or less successful, because on average they're probably going to be pretty close. It probably comes down to the individual. What are they looking for on that app? How are they choosing a partner? How are they choosing someone? And regardless of whether they're doing it online or in person, if they're choosing a mate or a life partner for poor reasons, then that's probably not going to be a very healthy marriage. So as researchers, we generally look for those processes that you know, hold relationships together or pull them apart. And those are going to be there in online and in offline relationships.
Dennis, when you're using these apps, do you have any concerns about what some writers are calling the context vacuum? So when you're meeting strangers online, you can't say, oh, my roommate's friend thinks that she'd be great for you, or this person would be a great match. There are no stakes to, I have to try to be nice and impress this person because they're going to come back and report back to my friend. So in the old model of dating, of course, the circumstance is different. You meet through work, you meet through school, you meet through friends. When you're just talking to a stranger, someone that has no ties to anyone in your life, do you think about that at all when you're using the sites?
Personally, I treat everyone as if they know someone that I know, because A, in Rochester, that's likely to be the case.
Yeah,
anyway.
That's fair.
But B, I think it just creates a healthier dialogue anyway. I hate to kind of, I won't bring it up directly, but there is the negative thing that unsolicited pictures that are sent to women online. And if you were to compare that to something in public, you know, like, would you ever do that? And I would imagine most of those people that for some reason that boggles the mind think they should do it online wouldn't even do it in person. But you know, I think that unfortunately there is an element of that, and it's reflected both in the bios of women. You know, you can kind of reverse engineer what a woman's online dating experience is by what they put in their own biographies. Which might be a different study, but unfortunately, it's very clear that women are treated poorly. I wouldn't guess, not being one, but it's seemingly a fairly large chunk of the time, or maybe a larger amount of the time that the average nice guy / good guy or normal guy would expect, until they're told, oh, by the way, this is what we go through. And you're like, whoa, really? Why would someone do that? But unfortunately, that's how it is, I guess. And, you know, you have to make sure that you're respectful. And I think it often comes through when you are being respectful. People can kind of notice, and the language that you choose and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Uli, do you want to jump in there? Have you had any, I don't want to make you call out negative experiences, but how do you feel about that context vacuum? Do you think that people are more likely to be rude or stand other people up because they may not have connections in person?
I've been fortunate enough not to receive anything unsolicited, but I know that, like, some of my friends have, and it's, I don't know. I think it's easier to say things and do things online, and even, like, maybe, like, over a text message than it is in person, because you're not, like, there's no physical fear of that person, like, throwing a drink in your face, whereas if you did that at the bar, like, you're definitely going to be called out. Mm-hmm. Like, and then also just personally, like, I've never had anything like that happen to me, but if anyone's ever rude or anything, I think that's another nice thing about Tinder, is that you can just unmatch them or unfollow them, or if they are sending you something, you can report it. And then I know some people have gotten their accounts just, like, completely deleted. So I think that Tinder does, at least, like, they're good about making sure that creeps are kind of put in their place.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, most of them.
Well, I'm late for our only break of the hour. We're going to take that short break. When we come back, I'm seeing a lot of your questions come in via email, so we'll take some of those. Also, you can join the conversation by phone, 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. The email, of course, connections@WXXI.org. And you can find me on Twitter at MMacMedia. So more on dating, on algorithms. I have questions for our researchers and more from our guests next. I'm Megan Mack. Monday on The Next Connections, it's one of our favorite shows of the year, Rochester and Western New York's favorite books, the 2018 edition. We sit down with people in our community, local leaders, community members, to talk about their favorite books that they've read this year. Those books don't have to have been published this year, just read. It's a great way to build your 2019 reading list. That's Monday. Talk to you then. You are listening to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about how mobile dating apps and online dating sites have changed dating culture. My guests are Dennis O'Brien. He's a Rochester resident who uses mobile dating apps. Uliana Nikolaeva-Herr is a Rochester resident who met her husband, Mike, on Tinder. Ronald Rogge is an associate professor of psychology at the University of Rochester. And joining us by phone is Harry Reese, professor of psychology and dean's professor in arts, sciences, and engineering at the University of Rochester. Before we get back to some advice, perhaps, and research from Ron and Harry, I have a question from a listener named Margaret. She says, for myself as a queer woman, I've noticed quite a bit of difference in the online mobile meeting experience as compared to my straight friends. I've dated and met a lot more queer friends through online meeting, which I find beneficial, since you might not know if someone is in the LGBTQ plus community right off when you meet someone in person. Anecdotally, I've noticed that women send a lot less messages than men, and then when you throw that in, that it's two women who maybe are socialized to be less assertive, dating often can feel a lot more passive. Can you talk a little bit about the research relating to how online meeting differs, especially for the LGBTQ plus community, and more specifically, non-straight women?
Well, most of the research on geosocial networking apps has been on Grindr. And that really targets gay men, not so much lesbians or bisexuals. So, and a lot of that has been sort of harm-focused, looking at how Grindr use is associated with higher risk of multiple sexual partners, STDs, things like that. We found, usually when I do a study, I have about equal proportions of gay males and lesbians. It's generally when I put a study online and I ask people to tell me about their relationship for a half hour, mostly women respond. Guys are just not as interested in talking about that. It was a little more even gender-wise when I did this on trying to find romantic partners, but it was still a bit laden toward females than males. So we had quite a few Tinder users who were from the LGBT community, and both lesbian and gay. And I ran some additional analyses, and if I remember correctly, we found that among the women there was a much stronger drive for finding relationships, whereas among the men, especially if they were using Grindr, there was a much stronger drive, motivation to find sex partners. So there was sort of what you might expect in the difference. But as far as the listener's question goes, my first study really didn't look at the rate of exchange or how quick those messages were, or how soon after start, you know, how many messages got exchanged before they met someone. So I don't have a good sense of that. But I would completely agree with the listener that there's probably a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Harry, do you have any research or data on that issue?
I would agree with what my colleague Ron said. There's really very little good information out there about the difference. Obviously, the key difference is that in face-to-face meeting, often you don't know what someone else's sexual orientation is. But when you do it through an online site, you do. And having that information up front can play a big role in helping people feel less anxious, less worried about how they're coming across or whether they're going to seem inappropriate. And that would relax people, and I would think that would make it a lot easier to start contact.
Dovetailing on what Harry just said, even though Grindr is specifically targeting men who have sex with men, when we ask them what their sexual orientation identity is, only about 60% of them self-identify as gay. So Grindr, and to a lesser extent Tinder, can be a mechanism for someone who's exploring other non-heterosexual options, a non-threatening way for them to try and find same-sex partners, where that, you know, that's a lot less threatening than walking into a gay bar. Or so it's, I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Margaret, I hope that answers your question. I think it did. There are a number of misconceptions that, Harry, you've addressed in your Scientific American article regarding online dating. And one of them, and I'd be interested to hear what Dennis and Uli think, is that people think they're good judges of which qualities described in an online profile will appeal to them in person. So I take that to mean you read something online, you think, oh, I may be a good match for this person because of XYZ. You meet that person in person and you find, oh, that connection isn't quite there and I thought it would be. Am I describing it correctly, Harry?
Yes, you are. Yeah. I mean, there are certain qualities that people are very good at knowing about. So, for example, I might know that I really want someone who's educated. That's a relatively easy thing to do. But there are many qualities that people are actually surprisingly inarticulate about being able to know what they like. Someone might, for example, say that they're looking for someone who's fairly dominant and assertive in their socializing. And then when they actually meet someone like that, they hate it. So people often don't have a lot of self-awareness about what's really important to them and what isn't. And I think one of the things that people really need to do before they go on one of these sites is to really be thoughtful about what's a deal breaker, what's absolutely essential for me, and what could be something that it might be interesting to learn about or explore.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, do you have any thoughts on that? Have you found that maybe what you thought you were looking for when you're reading profiles is not really what you were looking for when you met people in person?
Yeah, I think there's definitely an element of that. And I think just in maybe a wider context that most people, especially, you know, the more you age, it usually helps. But, people tend to lack self-awareness in many aspects just in general. So certainly when it comes to dating, that can be amplified. But I have had those types of experience where you meet someone and you think something is what you're looking for and you kind of realize it's not. I'm 40, so I've dated a lot over the years. So I've become more in tune both with myself and both kind of what I'm looking for, and that results in kind of being, like some people might call it picky, but kind of really identifying and being honest and being upfront. And I think that type of honesty and upfrontness is aided by dating apps because you can be. There's not much risk in not being honest, and there's really not much reward, even going back to the age thing. You know, if you're going to have to meet someone eventually, or if that's the goal, and you don't really want to base something that could be considered being based on a lie. And also, you wouldn't want to enter into something where you thought it was a characteristic that you liked, you don't like, and now you're either going to, put your happiness or comfort level secondary to other things. And that just, in the long term, that doesn't work out. And I think that's something that's important. He referenced the deal breakers as well. Like, that's something that you don't want to go down those roads if you don't have to, because they get worse as you go down the line.
This question is going to sound silly, and it's not meant to, but I can't find a way around it. So, I mean, you're putting your best self in your profile, right? You're choosing your best photo. You're writing a bio that you think makes yourself the best person that you can be. You're not putting things in there like I snore or I, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I look like X. So should we be more honest? Are we at a point where we can just be like, hey, here are the really awful things about me. And if you can put up with that, swipe right. I told you it was a silly question, but I'm being serious. Should we be even brutally honest in some of this stuff?
I think it depends on your personality. It's funny. I know people who like, they put a picture of themselves with like no makeup, like from an unflattering angle. And that's just part of their personality. Maybe they're like kind of silly, but I think that even in like non-traditional dating, people definitely do that. Like they wear makeup, they do their hair, they put on their prettiest dress, and then it's not until later when you become more comfortable with the person that you kind of let go of some of that. So I think that just like it just carries over into online dating.
I think that's a fair answer. Maybe I'm trying to bypass months and months of trying. No, I'm kidding. Misconception number two, Harry, that I read in your piece, comparing multiple potential partners side by side is an effective way to evaluate compatibility. So the more options you have, the better decisions you will make. And that is a misconception. Am I characterizing that correctly?
You're absolutely characterizing that correctly. There's lots of research that shows that when people make side-by-side comparisons among lots of options, they tend to make superficial choices. They tend to sort of pick on the obvious characteristics for deciding which of the options they prefer. And it doesn't lead to very thoughtful kind of consideration. The right way to evaluate profiles is to read one profile at a time and to make an up or down decision about that particular profile, imagining what would it be like to have dinner with that person? What would it be like to go camping with that person? What would it be like to just spend time talking about things that are important to you? A lot of people who deal with this work recommend that you should never look at more than 20 profiles at any given time. And that seems like a perfectly reasonable number to me.
Okay. Ron, any thoughts on that?
Well, I totally agree with Harry, and I think it comes back to your question that you asked just a little bit ago. I'm happily partnered, and we're getting married this coming summer.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. 11 years in, it's about time. But if I were on these apps and I ran across somebody who wrote in their profile like the good and the bad with in a clever, witty way, that would make me want to swipe right on that person and go on a date with them because I think they would be fun and interesting to sit across from at dinner.
In a fun and clever way,
yeah. Maybe not in an E or my life is terrible kind of way, but right. in a fun and clever way, that would be really appealing to me. And I just know that, I mean, I'm a psychologist, so I probably have too much insight and too much introspection for my own good. But I know that that kind of wit would make for an enjoyable evening, whether there was a romantic connection or not. So, I mean, I think I totally agree with you, what was said earlier. It just kind of depends on your personality, whether that's going to – what you should put out in your profile depends on the kind of personalities you're trying to attract.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it relates to the self-awareness that many of us, as Dennis mentioned, probably lack. So misconception number three, and this is the one I have to admit sounded the most interesting to me, that answers to questions and algorithms can predict romantic compatibility. So sites like eHarmony that are using these calculations, and Harry, you're writing, there is no evidence of this. No site has allowed scholars to do research on that. So we should not be relying on algorithms to match us with potential partners.
Psychologists rarely give definitive answers like you just proposed, but in this case, that's absolutely right. There is absolutely zero evidence that the algorithms eHarmony uses are any more effective than throwing darts at a wall.
Do they have anything that's self-published?
They have self-published a few papers. Those are of very low quality. They're the kind of thing that would never pass muster in a peer review process. In fact, there was a big controversy a few years ago where at an international conference, one of the eHarmony matchmakers at the time decided that they would go public with one of the algorithms they use. Basically, he was laughed off the stage. And John Tierney of the New York Times did a piece about it, if anyone wants to look for it. It's entirely possible that there could be an algorithm that would be effective, but no one has done the kind of research that would be necessary to test it out yet.
Harry, didn't somebody from Eli Finkel's lab present at SPSP, and they used machine learning? They gave speed dating couples huge, long personality profiles, sort of a research-based version of eHarmony's questionnaire, and then used machine learning to see if there was any way to actually predict compatibility that these people self-reported on after speaking for 5 minutes. And they showed that their machine learning, like our most complicated statistics you can use, couldn't figure that out. Like the percent of prediction was about zero.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Which means that it's going to be a challenging task for anybody.
Right, but there's a simple reason why the kind of algorithms that sites like eHarmony use can't work, and that is that their algorithms are based on what you answer in questionnaires. Questionnaires don't predict who will feel chemistry with someone else and who won't. So the kind of information that's available before two people have met is very unlikely to be a successful predictor of compatibility. So they've really set up a task for themselves that couldn't succeed even if it was well done.
Well, and to piggyback on that, I think one of the perfect examples is everybody says they want someone who has a sense of humor.
Mm. Right.
But everybody's sense of humor could be wildly different. Therefore, right. You could get someone who says, oh, I have a sense of humor, but then you meet them and, you know,
they're super someone dry, likes... or super raunchy.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's not a match with yours.
Yeah. A couple questions from listeners when we're down to our last few minutes. Keith on the phone and a listener via email have some questions about dating for older people, people in their 60s perhaps, people who are post-divorced, maybe who have been widowed. And this listener online says, we who have been around for the previous culture of dating seem to be more reticent to try this new mode. One of your panel members spoke to sites for those in their 40s and 50s, leaving me feel even older. But any advice for people in their perhaps 60s or 70s? Ron, you look thoughtful.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of the site. I said 40s and 50s, but they definitely target... I think if somebody was in their 60s, they would still be well within the target audience for that website. I just can't remember the name of that.
There's
website.
One I've seen an ad for on TV. I think it's called Our Time or
yes.
Our Age.
Our Time. Okay. OurTime.com.
Okay. So there are sites out there for specific populations.
And to those people that are feeling reticent, just think about what it felt like to pick up the phone and call someone and get their parents on the phone. This is still much better.
Way better. Much easier. And just, you know, if my advice would be give it a try. Most of these sites, especially the dating websites, they'll let you sign up for free. You can see what other people, other singles in your area look like. You can send a few messages. If it feels uncomfortable, you don't have to meet those people. You don't have to respond to those messages. But if it just takes an afternoon of your time, there's really very little harm that could come from giving it a try.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're down to our last minute and a half just about, and I want to go around the table and ask each of our guests what the ideal app would be for them, either from a research perspective or from a user's perspective. Harry, I'll let you kick things off here. What is the ideal app?
I would love to see an app that allows people to do interactive games with each other so that you would get to know what interacting with the other person is like without having to, you know, go actually meet them face to face.
Okay, great. Uli.
Maybe like an all-encompassing app that does different things based off of like what you put in. Like, I think that some of them do that already. Like, oh, like female searching for male searching for male, da da da. But maybe even an all-encompassing app instead of like Tinder, Grindr, Bumble, da da da. Just all in one, maybe.
Okay, great, Ron.
Well, I'm primarily a couples and family researcher. So I'm actually in the process of developing an app for couples. It's going to be called the Agape app. But as far as dating goes, I think it would be great. I liked Harry's idea. And if it could be a group thing where you did it not just with potential partners, but with your friends, that would be awesome as well.
Great. Dennis.
I think those are all great ideas. I think the all-encompassing app would be nice. And I think the interaction in games is actually a great idea I'd never thought of.
Great. Well, you all have projects now, and maybe we'll come back in a year and we'll be working with some of these. I'd like to thank all of my guests this hour, Dennis O'Brien, Uliana Nikolaeva-Herr, Ron Rogge, and Harry Reese joining us on the phone. Thank you all so much for sharing the hour with us today. My thanks to Rob Braden, our engineer, Randy Gorman helping us out on phones a couple times these last couple days. And on behalf of Evan, Rob, and myself, Happy New Year, everybody. We will talk to you in 2019.